This podcast is produced by KPP Financial Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the June 7th edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. That's what we're all about here. And I say we today because today I have with me Justin Klein.
This is a rare experience
as of late,
but it's good to do the show with you.
Anyways, we welcome everybody. Love to talk to you. Robo-advisors are taking the emotion out of wealth management, but not everyone thinks that's a good thing. Robo-investing, the pros and cons, and we're going to talk about that today. We really are. Now, it's easy to talk in theory about risk, investing, emotions, but living with it in real time is something else. Market cycles are impossible to predict. Their price movements are essentially random, but we know that markets will neither continue up indefinitely nor fall to zero. And in the past, they have always reverted to the mean. What does that mean, reverted to the mean?
Mean is the average.
Average. And what's the market done over the last 25, 55, 110 years? About 9% if you include dividends. Okay, maybe 10. That's average. So you know from that the market has an upside bias. But that's the mean. That's the average. Now, Frank Arnstein, writing for Forbes, describes that capitalism would not work if it was not so, if the market didn't go up and down and have unpredictable moves. He says, try to imagine a world in which investors could buy only assets that had gone up with assurance, with you know it's going to go up, and continue to make profits. Or that by avoiding certain asset classes, you know, you would prevent future losses. All money, all capital would quickly flow to the current successful asset class and stay there. And the rest might as well close up shop because they're not going to attract any capital at all. The world economy would probably collapse. And we'll be probably back grubbing for bugs to eat. Well, some bugs are, you know, are
crickets.
Covered crickets. Are they chocolate covered?
No, they're flavored with different types of.
Okay, well, if they're not chocolate covered,
I don't want to eat barbecue crickets. And sour cream and onion. And
Justin has a friend who sells crickets. That's why we're talking about that.
It's a growing niche. It's small, but it's growing.
So, investors understand this on a certain level, okay, that you know you got to have the ups and downs. You know that certain markets work at certain times better than other markets at other times. And they know it's a ride. It's a roller coaster ride. Everybody knows that. It's not something to be feared. It's not your worst enemy. It's just the way it works. So that's why you hear a lot of recommendations of you just buying different asset classes to hold on your portfolio. Because sometimes some asset classes work. Sometimes they don't. So when one works, the other one will, vice versa, and you have a much less of a roller coaster ride that way.
That's kind of like the buckets of money type of theory.
Yeah, that's the theory.
Yeah.
Okay, and it works pretty good. It really does.
Yeah. That's why I always say, you know, it's everyone should have certain level of exposure to almost every asset class to a degree.
Yeah.
Right? So, it just depends on the person, what their needs are, and you weigh one's side over the other.
So think about that when you're ready to dump a lagging asset class. You think it's not going to work. Because remember, it's a roller coaster ride. Things work sometimes. Sometimes they don't.
And going back to the mean, you know, reversion to the mean. And you know, say when people want to dump a lagging asset class, usually based on the last 2 or 3 years of performance, whatever that performance is, if that's negative, the odds are that the reversion to the mean, it means that the returns going forward are actually probably going to be more attractive than another asset class that maybe did really well over the last 2 or 3 years, because those will revert to the mean as well. It's not a hard and fast rule, but in general, that's the way the math tends to work.
So the trick is to control your emotions. You always want to sell the laggards. You always hate them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe not something you should be hating at all. Maybe that's just the opposite.
Yeah. Well, what's the value of it? What's the sustainability? Now, there are other things called value traps. So it's not everything that goes down is a great value. But understanding maybe areas of the marketplace, sectors, asset classes that have lagged and will come back and still have strong long-term fundamentals, and other companies will eventually go out of business.
So what do you guys want to talk about? Let's talk about whatever is in your financial pocket today that's causing you to do something. Let's talk about it. Controlling emotions, maybe. There's no tricks, by the way, to controlling emotions. It's not tricky. It's just understanding them. Our listener line is 888-99-CHART. That's our anytime line. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time. So let's take the first question that came in before today's program.
Hi there. My name is Sean. I'm calling from the great state of New Jersey. I listen to you on the podcast regularly. I have a question about an investment property. I bought it for $275,000. It's currently, it has a value of about $350,000, so it is worth a lot more than what I originally purchased for. I'm renting it out right now, and the rent, with all costs included, is covering the mortgage. I'm only making a little bit of money every month. So my question with that is, would it be worthwhile to sell the property now, take my profits, and invested it elsewhere, or hang on to the property and allow it to pay off that mortgage, and you know, in 20 years or so have that as rental income? I'll listen to you on the podcast, and thank you.
Well, I might refer you to, why did you buy the property in the first place? What was your original goal in buying that property? Was it to build asset, buy a very conservative asset by having the renters pay it off, or was it for a quick turnaround?
That's exactly my question. You know, is that 80 grand that you would get by cashing out something that you'd be happy with long term, or like Steve said, is this something that you want to be on like a 15-year mortgage, or you know, in 20 years, hopefully it'll be paid off and you can have that consistent cash flow. But it's even at whatever that rent is, which I'm assuming if it's bought it for 270s, maybe renting it for 2000, 2500 a month, you know, it take many years to get that $80,000 back from it. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. It's a great time to sell. You know, if you're thinking about selling in the near in the next 5 to 7 years, it's a great time to sell. So
yeah, there's a shortage of inventory everywhere.
Yeah. So your upside value growth of the property is probably limited from here. So it depends on your goal. Like Steve said, if obviously you're not getting positive cash flow, and we always say you should probably have some positive cash flow, because either you could have potential problem with a tenant. Steve, I know you rented, have rental properties, right? You ever tenant problems?
At some point in your career of ownership, being a landlord, you're going to have problems with the renter. Also, remember, you got to pay capital gains tax on whatever gain you have. You want to incur that? At this point,
that's something to consider as well. Hopefully, it sounds like he's owned it long term, so it would be long term capital gains. Yeah. But still, it goes back to what your goal is. And as long as your goal is to pay off that mortgage over time and just have that paid off asset in 15, 20 years, and that's your goal, then keep it. If it's to get cash flow and make money, I would say in the kind of short to medium term, this is a good time to sell.
Robo-investing, the pros and cons, that's one of our main talking points today. So what else do you want to talk about? I also have a couple of things. Why inflation-protected bonds remain attractive? Want to discuss that if we can. And the economic news we aren't talking about. The economic news we are not talking about. And finally, looking for a job? Are you looking for a job? A survey of 300 senior managers state body language is a major part of selecting a worker. Body language. What are they talking about? I'll go over the top six things that they look at that they say make a difference. So those are what we're going to talk about. But, of course, whatever's on your mind is first, up front. What do you want to discuss? We've gotten recent economic news, and the economic news is, okay, it's still showing that the economy is growing decently. A little weakness here and there. The thing that disturbs me is productivity. Our productivity has gone down for several years now, and even in the first quarter, It was negative and then revised being flat, but still was, you know, flat is not good. We need better productivity. It goes to our standard of living. So, you know, I'm really concerned that it's been in the doldrums for so long. And that means we all of our standard livings are going down. That's what
so
that means.
Why do you think it's doing so poorly?
I think that coming out of the deep recession, you had the government getting deeply involved in two major sectors of our economy, and that was healthcare and banking. And they made huge changes in these things that the CEOs across all sectors just sat back and said, you know what, I don't know what this is going to do to me. What is that healthcare law going to do to me? What is that banking law going to do to me? Even though I might be, you know, a manufacturer of widgets. And therefore, I'm not going to spend a lot of money upgrading my systems. I think that's part of it. I think fear. Fear by
and lack of investment in their own business that will make their business more efficient.
Exactly. That's what I think. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Lots to talk about today. What comes first is you. What topic do you want to talk about? How about life insurance? You want to talk about life insurance? 888-99-SHIRT is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hey, good afternoon, Justin and Steve. This is Mike from up the hill in Victorville, California. Last week, I remember you guys mentioned a stock, CETX. It's trading about $3.60 a share right now. I was just curious what would be a good entry point for that and where you might put a stop on it. And just thinking about opening up a small position in it. Your advice is greatly appreciated. Thanks.
Okay, this is CETX, Semtrex, Inc. It's on the NASDAQ exchange. It's a techie kind of company.
They make emission control systems and things like that. Super small company. Let's see what the market cap is. Sorry, I was being slow to bring this up. $35 million market cap.
Oh, come on.
Their growth is pretty good though.
That's not even small though.
That's
micro.
Yeah.
That's so small. To me, it's a huge risk. You only buy this kind of company with money you don't mind losing. Because you don't know. It's got good numbers, you know, it does, but you have no idea the longevity of this company. So if you wanted to try, it looks like on a chart, it put a pretty good base in.
Around $3. It had a big move up, and it's kind of consolidating. Now it's at $3.55.
So this is where you'd probably take your chance on it. But just remember, you're taking a big chance on this.
Yeah, they have a decent amount of debt, but they've been paying that down, which I like. Their growth is pretty strong. But these type of names, their businesses aren't solid and solidified yet. So it's very
risky.
Very risky. Yeah. I mean, the big guys can come in and squish them just like that if they really want to.
Yeah, but they also some big guy come and buy them. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So you got the yin and yang here.
Yeah. But I like that it's kind of tech oriented, it's small, and the value isn't bad if you look at the market cap compared to cash flows, and you know, debt has been coming down, which I like, and their revenue has grown dramatically from $7 million in 2009 to $121 million in the trailing 12 months.
This is the Best Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We're open to anything and everything about your money. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us. You can do it right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. 888-992-4278. What do you want to talk about? Well, let's talk about robo-investing. Robo. Does everybody know what that means?
I think most people nowadays know what the robo-advisor industry kind of entails, the basics of it. And it's not like a traditional advisor. And they offer a limited menu of kind of packaged options. Right, usually using some sort of mutual fund or ETF to build portfolios for somebody, and the fees are low in relation to most other advisors, including ourselves.
Right.
But there's also no handholding for times when are tough, and we haven't seen a lot of tough times in the past 5 or 6 years.
No.
But
none at all, really.
Yeah, and so the big question is, What happens when those tough times come?
I've been through this numerous times over my career. And what will happen, it's like investing, index investing. And I don't see a lot of difference between robo-investing and index investing, really.
Well, they're using index funds, right?
I know they
are. The robo-advisors aren't really picking active mutual funds, active ETFs. Well, they're creating a portfolio that's supposed to match particular goals.
But as I said, Josh, this is done the same with different way, different mm-hmm. same thing, different ways, and that it works great when there's a bull market.
Do you think that these systems give people a level of confidence that's unwarranted?
Yes, I think it gives them a false sense of confidence.
False sense of security?
Yes, I think it's a false sense because I know that when the market crashes, and the next time it does, because it will, that security will go out the window. These robo-investors will stay invested, which they should. I'm not even suggesting they're doing anything wrong. I'm not. I think it's a great idea. I just think that these types of systems ignore the psychology involved with investors. When they look at it and they see their money get cut in half or a third, they're not going to sit still and just take it. They haven't.
Well, the robo-advisors, it's all based on math, right? So you're right. They don't consider emotions at all.
No, I know.
And the big question is when you do have a big bear market, and like you said, the market goes down 20, 30, 40%, the robo-advisor is going to say, hey, you need to invest more. You need to keep putting it in. Now it's cheap.
And that's exactly the right thing to do.
Yeah, it is.
But you're still not dealing with the psychology of the person.
Exactly. And everyone says, oh, I can handle it. But when they see the value of their portfolio going down 20%, then they worry, is it going to go down 30? Yeah. Is it going to go down 40? Is it going to go down 70?
I don't know.
Which has happened. You know, the market's it's gone down 70% before.
So if you, the concept is very good, everybody. I don't want to tell you that it's bad. It's not. It's good. As long as you can live with it for 30 plus years and do it, not get in and out and try to time it or panic out when things go bad, then, yeah, it'll work great. It'll work great. Or if you're right near retirement, you better be very careful what investments you're going to have, and you might not get the good advice from the robo-investors.
Yeah. And this is where the personal interaction comes in. And this is what you do when you talk to clients and potential clients and you assess their risk tolerance. And we have a risk tolerance tool on our website that we use, gives you a score of 1 to 99. And Steve, you know, you use that a lot when you're talking to clients and as a basis to understand what type of investor they are. But is that the end-all be-all of metrics that you use to figure out whether a client is aggressive or moderate or conservative?
You've got to consider their age and how wealthy they are, period. And, there's many things to discuss.
And just speaking to them.
Yeah.
Right? And I think the how wealthy they are and what their needs are important as well because we see clients who, while they might be aggressive, right, they might be able to be aggressive because of their risk tolerance level as a human being, they have enough money to retire and reach their goals, so they don't need to be as aggressive. But a robo-advisor isn't going to be able to really go into that specific. So that's, I think, one of the big drawbacks of a robo-advisor.
Let's go to Noel in Fremont. How you doing, Noel?
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. It's great to see both of you all together.
Thank you.
Enjoy your show every day, 4 to 5, driving from work to home.
I appreciate that.
I have a question on CVAP. I have called earlier, invested in like January, I think the same time you did, mm-hmm. holding on for the last 6 months, running out of patience. want to know opinion. What do I do? Is it a value trap? Should I sell? What do I do?
Well, if you don't have enough, I'd buy more. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. I wouldn't sell it. No. It's not a value trap because there is value. There's real value. It's a huge mega cap company. This would not be considered a value trap.
Yeah, I mean the worry is that the whole generic pharma industry is going to go away. I think is a total it's overblown the risk and the fear. So there's certainly some issues around the business, and they are restructuring and things like that. And they do have a lot of debt, but it's a company that continues to have good cash flow and good profit potential going forward, albeit probably a little bit lower levels than you've seen in the past. But at these cheap levels of trading at now, I think it's still cheap.
They have a decent pipeline of drugs. I'd buy more.
Be sure to sign up for our InvestTalk Insiders program. It's a source of good information, up-to-date financial news and insight, and a whole library of timely info sheets and recorded webinars. It's free. Just click on the InvestTalk tab on InvestTalk.
Our podcast continues next. First, a number from KPP Financial. It's reason number 2 for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Reducing risk is the number one priority for everyone these days. In a low interest rate environment, you crave those great returns that stocks can give, but you're afraid of the risk. So what's the formula? Well, Steve can help you come up with an answer that fits your life situation. And there's never any charge for a complete portfolio checkup for our InvestTalk listeners, and no obligation of any kind either. To schedule your 1 hour with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review. Or if you'd rather, call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Now let's continue with the podcast. InvestTalk continues, and next time, the answer depends on a lot of factors, but it boils down to 4 main things that affect your financial, social, and emotional well-being. When should you retire? That's next time on InvestTalk. Right now, we welcome your call, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justine. This is Dave from Queens, New York. I have a quick question regarding Bank of America. I have some holding at the price of 24, and I see the P is below 15, and price to book is almost 1. I need to know what is the future prospect of the share. Hope to see you, listen to you on your podcast. Thank you.
Okay, this Bank of America, BAC is the symbol, everybody. And everybody knows who Bank of America is. Big, huge company, big bank. The question is, you know, the banks have had a very good run from the recession, and they have had a very good run since Trump got elected. So I think you're late. I think you're late to the game here on the big banks. If you remember right, I kept bad-mouthing the big banks before Trump got elected. And when he got elected, I suggested now's a good time to get into big banks because of the deregulation that he was proposing. And that, of course, made the banks run up. But now I think you're late to the game. I mean, we could go over the numbers, but, you know, it's big Bank of America.
And part of the increase in the bank stocks as well was the projection of higher interest rates, right? They're having a bigger spread between short-term and long-term loans. And that is pretty much unwound completely in the bond market since the election, but it hasn't in the financial stocks yet. But I think it eventually will. And if you look at more credit sensitive names like a Discover Financial, like a Capital One, you're seeing default rates increase there on car loans and credit cards. And those tend to be the first place where you see credit issues. And so I'm just not a big fan of the space overall. So I would not be buying Bank of America at these levels.
I wouldn't either.
I think
it's not like they're overvalued. They're really not that overvalued. It's just not at a bargain either.
And I think the book, using book value, I think since the financial crisis, book value on banks has been broken. Because based on book value is based on the book value, what it's saying in accounting terms of what their assets are worth, as opposed to what the real world amount of their assets is worth. And so I wouldn't use book value for Bank of America to say it's cheap.
Appreciate the call. BAC is a symbol. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk about, economic news. You know, Trump has an agenda, and he's not getting much or any of that agenda passed. But there's quietly, there's something going on that people are really not paying much attention to that is part of his agenda and is getting infiltrated into the market space, and that is his reduction of red tape. This week, Congress, the House of Representatives, plans to bring out the deregulation bill. Had you heard anything about it? This week.
He talks about deregulation, but not as a bill.
Yeah, the one called, it's called the Financial Choice Act. Okay, it's going to be before the full House this week. And it's been quiet. It's been very, very muted. No one wants to talk about it. But it has a lot of Republican and some Democrat support. And what this means is, and I think you're seeing the effect of this a lot. Maybe that's part of why the stock market has been strong. Okay, so I think you're going to see, because everybody's anticipating less red tape going forward. Now, is it going to work? You know, is it going to affect the market? I don't think it really is going to affect the market much, even if it gets passed, because I think it's already been built into the market. So even though it has not been discussed. But the deregulation is kind of important to a lot of industries as far as cost reduction. And as I was saying to Justin before the show, why aren't our companies reinvesting into themselves? Why are our productivity so low? And I do believe this is part of the problem. Massive regulation that I think is probably mostly unnecessary. And that this bill and this effort probably is going to be successful. And that will be long-term beneficial for the economy and for the stocks. But I do think, as I said, everything's already built in. So don't think it's just going, the market's going to run up based on this. No, not saying that. I'm just saying the economy may be improved. We may see more reinvestment or investment in corporations. And we may see productivity numbers improve.
The question is, when will that, do you think that will be passed?
Maybe this year.
Yeah, are they focusing on healthcare? Are they going to focus on that or both?
Well, they're so distracted with all the other stuff politically.
Yeah. So. With the Comey issue and the healthcare bill, I don't think will be passed. Maybe by the end of the year. Maybe.
That's the problem. See, I think our market participants, the investors, are going to wake up one day and say, nothing's getting done. Mm-hmm. They're going to panic out.
How many days? Are we close to the 200-day mark yet?
I don't know. No. A lesson in everyday investing, everybody. Let's quiz you first. Being a watchful investor includes observing trends. Trends in the economy, trends in the stock market, trends in industries. Do you follow the trend? Does the trend lead you astray? What do you do? Follow it or don't follow it? Yes or no? There's an old saying, the trend is your friend.
Until it ends.
That's right. Chasing a trend is a behavior many amateur traders, as well as some pros, do. Unfortunately, it's a behavior that the smart money, institutional managers, profit from in a bullish or bearish market. Remember, there's always two sides to a trade.
Either right or one's either wrong.
Yeah, one of them is going to be wrong. One of them. Are you selling to the smart people, or are you selling to the stupid people? Which one is it? You don't know. I don't know. It's very difficult. A lot of the professionals, institutional traders, use sell-offs to buy stocks and use run-ups to sell stocks. Mm-hmm. So you have to understand where you are and what's going on as an investor. If you can't figure this out, I wouldn't try to be your own investor. You can't. Remember, there's always two sides of the trade, and there's a lot of smart people, a lot of smarter people than you out there somewhere.
It doesn't mean you can't do it. You just have to be fully aware of how the market works and fundamentals of the particular company, the industry, the economy, etc. And then you can understand. Give you a good idea of whether you're on the right side or not. And big institutions, they have a lot of information, retail, or research data that helps them figure out when to buy, when to sell, and what to buy and what to sell.
That's InvestTalk 101. I'm sure you have questions. You can get through right now at 888-99-CHART.
What are the factors that affect your risk tolerance? Time horizons, the amount of time you have to meet your financial goals. Cash, how much do you depend on your investments to meet day-to-day expenses? And then the emotional factors, your emotional response to changes in the value of your investments. Take the test and get the answers to these questions. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then look for free risk analysis.
Hi, Steve or Justin. This is Mike from Washington. I really appreciate the show. You've been a lot of help. I do have a question about researching stocks for purchase or sale because I need to know where to look first and what's most important when analyzing securities. There are many things to look at, but I was wondering if you have priorities. Again, I appreciate your information and the insights you have. Thanks again.
Well, of course, we have priorities. The trick here is everybody else has different priorities.
Mm-hmm. All right. And what type of investor are you? A value investor? Are you a growth investor? Are you worry about dividends? Are you trying to find stable, big blue chip companies or the next hot company coming out of Silicon Valley? Or you know, what is your risk tolerance and needs?
And each one of those groups have different, the most important thing to look for.
Yeah.
Not the same.
If you're looking for growth companies, you know, then you're worried more about the story and the chart and sentiment, et cetera. And you're probably not holding for a long, long period of time. You know, if you're a value investor, the first place you want to go to is somewhere like Morningstar.com. That's a good place to go to get an overview of what the fundamentals are of the company, sales, revenue, or I guess those are the same thing, profitability, earnings, debt levels, those type of metrics that
return
you need to look
equity,
at.
Return on equity, return on assets, you know, profit margins.
Cash flow,
all
free
those
cash flow.
And, you know, so Morningstar is a good place to go. I like FinViz for people who want to do some research and they have a good
and
search
filter,
engine.
Yeah, filtering.
Yeah, a good search engine there that's free,
yeah,
which is always good.
Yeah.
But, you know, we pay for data. So we buy a lot of data, a lot of research that at least the basic information that we do our own research on.
Yeah, I would say there's at least two or three dozen data points that we're considering when looking at a particular stock when I'm talking about fundamentals. And to us, fundamentals are the most important. Those figures and the value that you're paying for is really what matters the most. And that's where we start. We're value investors, but like we said at the beginning, maybe you're a growth investor.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about inflation. Let's talk about bonds. And let's talk about inflation-protected bonds, which have not been subject of anybody's interest for some time because we've had very little to no inflation.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when something is at, like we talked about earlier, when something is bad for a long period of time, a sector, a stock, a method of investing, that then turns at some point and we're thinking, at least I am, I'm thinking for those people who are looking for some conservative investments and yet want to stay ahead of inflation, TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Bonds, would be something that you would consider. Yes, we have no inflation right now, but I could see, you know, Europe is starting to turn around a little bit, Japan's starting to turn around a little bit, we're supposed to be increasing our GDP over the next couple of quarters, and the Fed is on the verge of raising another rate. Maybe they shouldn't, but they are. I can see inflation starting to ease into the economy.
Why is that?
Well, I can see it because we've had a prolonged period of overproduction. And that always follows with people cutting back production. You were just pointing out Saudi Arabia to me and their oil production.
Mm-hmm.
It goes in cycles. So the trick is, I think we're at the top of our production cycle. I think it's going to be cut. That will probably mean a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, inflation. So I'm just giving you a heads up. Tips might be something that you're going to make a little bit of money and it will stay with inflation if you want to have a very conservative part of your portfolio.
Yeah, that's the key is it may not be for everybody, but as a portion of your bond portfolio, bond section of your portfolio, it's probably the place you want to lean on.
Yeah.
Not because, all, but all of your bond exposure
no,
there.
No, I'm not even suggesting that. But if you have long-term bonds and Fed's raising rates, it's going to be painful.
Mm.
Are rates going to go up? Well, if our economy picks up in strength, they probably will.
And I think you've seen the last two, three years, the dollar getting very strong, which has been a headwind for inflation. And I think the dollar could get weaker.
Well, think about it. If Europe gets stronger, Japan gets stronger, those currencies compete with our currency.
And a lot of this, the Fed tightening rates, it's kind of priced in, right?
Yeah.
The question is, how much farther does the Fed have to go before they stop raising rates? Now, I think we're pretty close to the end because I think we're getting to an interest rate level. If you look at the 2 and 10 year spread, that the economy can't take too many more rate hikes before you start getting into a recessionary type scenario. You know, we're at, what were we, a 0.7% growth for the first quarter?
Yeah.
Isn't that what it was?
Yeah. Well,
GDP
I think
growth?
I think it was revised to 1.
To
it?
1, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Second quarter, I think we're somewhere in the 2s.
Yeah, so I think 2.3 is the average expert's call on.
So call it on, combine those together, you're talking about a 1.5%, 1.6% first half of the year.
Yeah.
That's very, very low. And remember, when the Fed raises rates or lowers rates, whatever they do, it usually takes about 6 months to filter into the economy.
Yep.
So if they raise rates, they raise rates in March, right? They raise rates in December.
And now they're
going to raise rates again here in June.
I think they are.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're not going to feel those full effects until the end of this year economically. And we already have a weak kind of economic reports coming out right now. So if the market suddenly realizes that the Fed will stop raising rates, I think the dollar will go down and that could push up inflation.
Okay, let's go back. Oh, we don't have time. We do have another call on the line. We will take that call after this break. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. We'd love to hear from you before the hour's up, at least. 888-99-CHARTER is the number, 888-992-4278. Did you see the oil report out this week? IEA oil report out. Very interesting. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Mark from Madison, and I was just wondering what a good time would be to get into ADT, A as in Apple, D as in Dog, T as in Tom. What you guys thought? Thanks. Bye.
Okay, they got bought out.
I was going to say, there's no ADT now.
They got bought out by we used to own them, and they got bought out.
Who did they get bought out by?
It was a private equity firm, I believe.
Oh.
If I remember
correctly.
If it's
private equity, it's not publicly traded. You can't buy it.
Yeah.
So you can buy the company that bought it, but if it's private equity, you can't even buy that.
Yeah, we had owned it for, we did really well. I think we made 40, 50%. Don't quote me on that. I'm trying to remember it, but I believe it was last year or the year before they got bought out.
I'm not sure why he's asking the question if it's not available for him to purchase.
I don't know. Maybe he's getting old information.
Yeah, it's no longer a publicly traded company. Does everybody know what a publicly traded company means? It means it's a company that us, the public, can buy and sell on the exchanges, like the New York Stock Exchange, the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. When it's a private company, of course, the people who own the company have it, and it's not traded on, you can't buy it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could if they're trying to raise money, there's ways to buying the private placement, maybe, but
that's unusual. That's usually for startups and stuff, not a big company that's already.
There are some platforms that lets you invest in like the Ubers of the world, which isn't public as well. But those are difficult to deal with.
Looking for a job? A survey of 300 senior managers state body language is a major part of their selecting process. So what do they mean, body language? The number one thing that they don't like is lack of eye contact.
Somebody doesn't look you in the eye.
They look
something
down.
Wrong.
Or yeah. You got to look in the eye. Next one is
communicate. I think that's the number one aspect of communication. Go try to have a conversation with somebody and don't look them in the eye.
Yeah,
it gets awkward. It's really awkward.
I don't know. Some people are awkward looking you in the eye. Some cultures think it's rude to look you in the eye when they talk to you. Another number two is facial expressions. Don't make weird faces.
My grandpa always made weird faces. I thought they were funny.
Yeah, well, that's not a good day thing if you're looking for a job.
Yeah.
Posture.
Oh, that I think that's key
don't
too.
Slouch. Don't kind of be so relaxed.
I'm kind of slouchy.
Okay. A handshake is number four. A good firm handshake.
Yeah, I hate when someone shakes your hand and they're kind of.
Don't be fidgeting while you're talking about the job. And don't do a lot of hand gestures.
Don't do a lot of hand gestures
when you're talking to your future employer.
I think it depends what type of hand gestures they are.
Well.
Because they say if you show the palms of your hands when you're talking, you're more trustworthy. That's why politicians, if you look at politicians.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we could use this word trustworthy in the same sentence as politicians.
That's difficult. I agree with that one. I'm just saying that's there's different techniques that you can use. I like eye contact the most.
I think, is probably number one. Yeah. I really do.
If I'm talking to somebody that I don't really know very well, I haven't met, and they're not looking me in the eye, and they're kind of looking off into the distance regularly, it shows me they're not engaged, and they just aren't comfortable in a social situation.
Well, I'll tell you this, though. The most important thing, if you're going for a new job, and you're going for, and you're sitting there, the thing that you need to really do is research the company before you go and talk to the prospective employer. Make sure you know all about the company, at least all the information that's out there, and bring it up in the conversation.
And I would bring it up with questions.
Yeah.
I think a good question, a good
like
pointed question.
You know, company, I understand the company just purchased another company, ABC company. What is the plans for the new company? Mm-hmm. What was the reasoning behind that?
Yeah.
That'd be a great question. And you know, you don't just sit there and just answer questions. You ask questions. Show interest. Show interest. If you don't show any interest, okay.
Did your research not just on them, but also maybe their competitors, the industry, understanding the industry and who maybe you'd be competing against in that industry.
All that shows interest. Yeah. All of it. You got to show interest. Why would they give you the job if you don't?
And dress appropriately. And that doesn't always mean dress the super nice, but dress appropriately for that
for
particular
job.
Company.
That's right. Time's up for the hour. We have to go. And
adios.
Before we go, I'll remind you, I will be in San Jose on June 14th, San Jose, meeting with individual people about their retirement portfolios, talk about what maybe we can do for them. So if you want to reserve your hour, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. That's, again, June 14th in San Jose. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley along with Justin Klein. We are registered investment advisors, and we work for KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And we'd love to talk to you. So let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.